Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, July 24, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney down in Washington following last night's season opener that we broadcast between the Nationals and the Yankees. Yeah, everything began again last night, and it was sort of classic 2020. About 5 hours before the first pitch of that game, we learned that Juan Soto, the best hitter in the Washington lineup, tested positive for COVID-19. He's on the injured list. He missed the game on Thursday. He's out indefinitely. Mike Rizzo, the Nationals general manager, talked about how this is going to be something that teams are going to have to deal with.
This is part of preparation for baseball in 2020. We're going to have to learn how to adjust to these things. And I think that the team that really does the best job of keeping their star players on the field and keeping them healthy is got a better chance of winning than the other teams.
Now, after the Nationals got word of the positive test in the morning, they spent the next few hours scrambling, going through health and safety protocol, trying to determine who Juan Soto had been around in the previous day, and going through, and a lot of other people in the organization going through tests who may have had contact with him. He was asked about whether or not this could be a false positive.
Well, I'm not a medical doctor. I just follow protocol. So he's going to be tested and retested, and we will see and abide by all the protocols of the CDC and MLB.
Now, that was the backdrop before this game. Dr. Anthony Fauci threw out the first pitch, and it went way to the left. It was a socially distant first pitch. Nationals and Yankees began, and in the top of the first inning, Giancarlo Stanton came to the plate against Max Scherzer. We've been talking about how great he looks physically. Well, it certainly paid off last night.
1-1 to Stanton. Swing and a high fly ball, well struck out towards left center field. That one back there on its way, and gone! Absolutely crushed by Giancarlo Stanton out to left center.
Boog Sciambi, the legend on ESPN Radio, 460 feet on that home run. Adam Eaton came to the plate in the bottom of the first against Garrett Cole.
2-2 is hitting the air right field, pretty well struck. Going back is Judge, and that one is gone. Adam Eaton will touch them all.
Yeah, we've been hearing from folks around baseball that the baseball is flying again. And even with two of baseball's best pitchers on the mound last night, that was the case. The Yankees added to their lead in the top of the third.
The 0-1. Swing and a ball rocketed down the left side, and that's a fair ball. And that one is getting towards the corner. Stevenson over to pick it up, racing around third and heading towards the plate is Wade. And Wade will come in to score. It's an RBI double for Aaron Judge, and it's 3-1.
Stanton tacked on in the top of the fifth.
Scherzer ready, out of the stretch, kicks, fires. Swing and a line drive into right field, and that one is going to get down for a base hit. One run comes in to score. And the Yankees on the single to right by Stanton make it 4-1.
And after allowing that first inning home run, Garrett Cole looked good.
The 2-2. Outside corner, got him looking. Robles is gone. And for Garrett Cole, that is strikeout number 5, and the Nationals are done in the fifth.
And then three batters into the top of the sixth innings. The rains fell. They waited for a couple of hours and eventually canceled the rest of the game. The Yankees, with a 4-1 victory that became official after the Nationals, but batted in the bottom of the fifth inning. Garrett Cole talked with the reporters after the game about his debut.
I was so excited. I was walking through the clubhouse before, and I saw like a bunch of guys in Yankees uniforms. Like, and I don't know, it just hit me that this was for real. And so I was definitely battling some adrenaline early, trying to hone the timing and the sync with kind of that new surge. But I thought Gary guided the ship about as well as you could have.
Now, the other game on baseball's opening day, the Dodgers and the Giants, there also was another major star who went down just before the start of the game. The Dodgers announcing that Clayton Kershaw has to go on the injured list with a back issue. Dustin May stepped in. Dave Roberts talked to reporters about how Kershaw got injured.
It was his workout on Tuesday. His back stiffened up. and got treatment on it that night, felt better. Yesterday came in, felt a little bit better. And then this morning, just with the training staff, just to make sure we err on the side of caution, didn't feel that it was prudent to start him. We let Dustin May know yesterday that this was a possibility. And so this is the way it's played out.
He was asked about a timeline for Clayton Kershaw.
I don't know the timeline. I mean, obviously, only time will tell. And we all know Clayton and the training staff are going to do everything they can to get him back as soon as possible. So we really don't know the timeline.
The Dodgers and the Giants are tied 1-1, bottom of the seventh inning. Mookie Betts got his first hit for the Dodgers.
Betts on 2-1. Finds a base hit into left field. But Mookie is aboard. His first hit is a Dodger. Single to left.
Charlie Steiner, AM 570 LA Sports. Justin Turner gave the Dodgers the lead.
Turner grounds it to the right side. Now coming home is Betts, who beats the throw. And the Dodgers take a 2-1 lead.
And in the bottom of the eighth inning, the Dodgers blew it open.
Here's the 2-2 Hernandez with a fly ball to deep left field. It is way back and it is gone. A home run. The crowd is going crazy. A 2-run shot for Kike Hernandez.
Charlie Steiner with a little bit of sarcasm there on AM 570 LA Sports. Now, before the Nationals-Yankees game, those two teams knelt in unison as part of the opening day ceremony that featured references to the Black Lives Matter movement, the coronavirus pandemic, and that, of course, included the first pitch by Dr. Anthony Fauci, and the home team's 2019 championship. Players from both clubs wore T-shirts saying Black Lives Matter during batting practice at Nationals Park, and the letters BLM were stenciled into the back of the mound at the center of the diamond in a poignant reference to the racial reckoning happening in the U.S. Players and other members of both teams held a long black ribbon while standing spaced out along the two foul lines. After they placed the black ribbon on the ground, everybody then got on their knees, and then they all stood for the national anthem. Mookie Betts, beginning his first season as the Dodgers right fielder, he knelt for the national anthem with teammates Max Muncy and Cody Bellinger putting hands on his shoulder. After the game, Mookie Betts talked about his decision.
It just shows unity. I think everybody's on board with what's going on in the world. We have to make some change, and you know, it starts here, and we have to do our part. And you know, it's amazing to know that everybody here is on board with something. And like I said, we have to find a way to make change, and this is the first step.
It's official. The Major League Baseball Player Association agreed to a plan to expand the playoffs to 16 teams for the 2020 season. Sources telling ESPN's Marley Rivera are going to be talking about that with Carl Ravitch coming up. The Red Sox shut down ace Eduardo Rodriguez after complications developed from his coronavirus. He tested positive earlier this month. The Baltimore Orioles in the state of Maryland have had talks about the team sharing Oriole Park at Camden Yards with the displaced Toronto Blue Jays. Of course, the Blue Jays have been looking for a home now for weeks for the 2020 season. Now, before we get to Carl Ravitch and to Todd Radom, today on ESPN Daily, fighter Christy Martin is set to be in the Boxing Hall of Fame, but her biggest fight is one of survival after a violent attack. Hear how she saved her own life on ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All aboard! It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravage.
And the Rabbit Train now parked firmly into the 2020 season now that it's started. Carl, welcome to the day after opening day. And it felt absolutely typical for what we've seen in 2020.
Well, given that you sat through a rain delay, we came on about a half hour early for a 10 o'clock game. There was a significant COVID reveal on Juan Soto. There was Mariano Rivera on the South Lawn talking to President Trump. And of course, we had the players unified and holding a black ribbon. So, yeah, I mean, we went full kitchen sink on opening day to set up what is going to be. And by the way, the announcement of expanded playoffs, what is going to be, as I keep saying, the most memorable season of baseball we've ever seen.
And it's going to be a busy day today. I know as soon as I'm done this podcast, I'm going to jump in the car, drive home, be part of the broadcast that we're going to do Cubs and Brewers tonight. You're going to be part of the broadcast for Athletics and Angels late tonight. So it's going to be a busy day on ESPN with three different games. You mentioned the Juan Soto testing positive. Jeff Passan got that word about 5 hours before the start of the game. And it almost felt appropriate that that would happen, Carl, right? I mean, because we've all been wondering, okay, what happens if a team just before a game finds out that a player is going to be taken off the field because he tests positive? What happens next? And from what we heard from Dave Martinez, you know, he found out about 9:30 yesterday morning and spent the next 3 hours on the phone going through protocol, going through the list. Okay, who did Juan speak to at the ballpark? What group was he in for batting practice? Who did he talk to? And as Dave talked to us, you could hear the uncertainty in his voice about whether or not today, when they get test results back from yesterday, if they're going to be somebody popping up that also might be taken off the field.
Yeah, look, I can only speak to my own personal experience with Buster. And while it's very different from the import and impact on a national level for a superstar baseball player and the 30 guys on his team, I will say it is incredibly anxiety driving when you find out that someone in your own family, in this case, the baseball family, tests positive and you recognize you have been around them, in contact with them, et cetera. We had our son come home from a trip and you find out that one of the people he was with in a house tested positive for COVID. And immediately, alarms go off in your head about the times you've been around him. You run to get tested, and in a close environment like a baseball family, in the Nationals case, I completely understand the anxiety that Davey Martinez is feeling. And you hope, with fingers crossed, that none of that from Juan Soto is spread to anybody else. I think the impression I get, though, is that Major League Baseball has done, and the players in particular, have done such a very good job of having themselves tested and existing within their own bubble that when somebody does test positive, you hope the goal is you remove them from the equation and you prevent any further spread. I think the other part that I took away from yesterday was, the quick turnaround while there are rapid tests, et cetera. Major League Baseball will test on a Tuesday. He'll play Tuesday night, get the results Wednesday, or in this case, test a couple of days Wednesday, find out the test results Thursday. And that sort of lead time is troubling. The idea that you get tested, as I said, on a Tuesday, you play a game Wednesday, you're around a variety of people, allegedly social distancing. But one thing we learned from the games last night, there's not a lot of that going on.
No,
that you are putting yourself and your teammates at risk. And that part, you're like, whoa. So, you get tested one day, you play that day, and then you don't find out for two more days what the result was. So there is obviously a window of opportunity if you happen to test positive to expose other people to it. And that's a scary part of this.
high anxiety, and it's what all along. And look, you know, people in baseball, including Sean Doolittle, have been very, you know, very complimentary about how this system has been improved. The individual teams are improving it. I think everyone is in baseball is trying to improve it. But the fact is that it is, as one, you know, one executive said to me, it's like Swiss cheese. I mean, there are a lot of holes in it, and they're just going to try to plow ahead and hope that they make it work. And I think everyone's got fingers crossed that no one gets really sick. And what we hear about Juan Soto is that he's asymptomatic. He's feeling okay. And I find myself having a hard time because that's a serious, you know, potentially life-threatening situation. But the reality also is, Carl, they're playing a season, and to lose the best hitter on your team just before the start of the year, that's only 60 games, that's when we talk about the competition on the field, that also mm-hmm. is, you know, certainly not as important, but it's a huge factor.
Without question. And look, I hope that nobody listens to a podcast or a broadcast or a conversation or a talk show in which you separate the two, because they need to be separated. And nobody is downplaying the reality of the significance to an individual's life. But yes, there is a lot involved in what he does professionally. And, you know, having one of the best superstar players in your organization and in the sport be diagnosed was a significant moment for baseball. This is not player 28 on a 30-man team, and they're all important. But in your point, Juan Soto makes the Nationals go. You remove him. And again, what you don't know is, while he may be asymptomatic, you don't know if this is the beginning of a COVID. You don't know if he's at the end of it. But there are certainly people who hang on to it, or it hangs on too. So it's not as if you can just snap your fingers and everybody falls under the same umbrella of he'll be better in a week. He'll be back in 2 weeks. Sometimes it takes a lot longer than that. And that's, you know, again, one of the unknowns here. How long will somebody be out? You just don't know, because it obviously affects individuals very differently. There's nothing uniform about it. And if Freddie Freeman's tale wasn't a warning to everybody, I don't know what was. It needs to continue to be taken as seriously as many people in this country do. It is life and death. You're absolutely right.
I've heard from teams that even players who are asymptomatic, it may take up to 21 days before they get the back-to-back negative test. So we don't know how long Juan Soto is going to be out. You know, fingers crossed that nobody else in the Nationals world is going to be affected. You know, we'll just see what kind of effect it has on the Washington baseball team. Carl, look, you and I knew implicitly that, you know, fans make the ballpark. You know, fans make the games what they are. And man, well, you know, yesterday afternoon, you know, 3 hours before the game, I'm walking into the ballpark down here in Washington. There are no lines. There's no parking guys waving people into lots. There's nobody wearing a Nats cap and a Nats jersey and strolling around. And then when you go into the ballpark, there are no smells. You know, there's no hot dogs. There's no grill. There's no chicken. Yep. There's no popcorn. Wow, that was so different. Just a completely different experience at the ballpark. And the only thing that was there was a bunch of players taking batting practice leading up to the start of the game. And then as they got ready for the pregame ceremonies, there was no buzz. There's no advance notice. And all of a sudden the PA announcer's talking and you realize, oh, that's the pregame tape that they've just started. And then the players begin to drift out on the field for those ceremonies. It was, to borrow Joe Panik's word, we had him on the podcast the other day, it was just weird.
Yeah. No, it's surreal. And, you know, we've had some exposure to it. We have for the last 12 weeks doing Korean baseball games. When you eliminate what is a very big aspect to Major League Baseball, I think on some levels there are some sports you can get away with it. You know, we've certainly seen golf on. We've seen NASCAR racing. But you generally hear the crowd in a baseball game. Because there's so much time in between pitches, the crowd becomes part of a television experience. Whether it's a reaction from a fan they are a part of this. And not having them there, I knew, and I know I've said it on the podcast, it's going to be startling for people to watch a baseball game, which would be like going to watch your son's Little League practice, just in terms of the number of people there witnessing the event. That was a ballpark last night, Buster, that holds 50,000 people. You know, it had probably 100 max, and fewer were seen. We heard different things. We hear players. We often hear frustration. We hear expletives. You're exposed to a variety of things that you otherwise wouldn't be. But you remove that part of this equation, and you remove a huge part of it. I know the players realize how incredibly fortunate and are grateful for being able to do what they do and get paid to do it. But anybody that suggests this is normal, is grossly understating what's going on. You're right. The fact that there are no people there, there's no noise when you go to a baseball game. There's always noise. There's always horns. There's always cars. There's always people. And now that's been removed. So yeah, to be there like you were last night, it had to be surreal because, again, while we do the games for television, you actually were in a ballpark. And I'm sure, did you have to say to yourself, I need to talk quieter because people may hear me? When if you're in a crowded, loud stadium, no one would be able to pick up what you're saying?
Yeah, I kind of wondered about that a little bit, but the crowd noise, imported crowd noise coming from the PA system was so loud, you realize that that's not going to be a factor. I would say this, you know, I asked Max Scherzer in a Zoom call on Wednesday, you know, how much he believed that, you know, the crowd noise played into what he did on the mound, you know, the adrenaline and the aggressiveness. Sure. And Max is such a great pro, and he's obviously incredibly self-driven. We talked yesterday about those bullpen sessions he does in full uniform, works himself into a lather. And he said, look, it's the great unknown. He said he's preparing himself mentally to not have it. He really feels like the competition is what drives the adrenaline. But I think generally speaking, players are naive if they don't think they borrow constantly the emotion of the fans. I mean, they're going to say all the right things because they need to. Wow, that's a huge element taken out. And you could feel it, Carl.
1,000%. We had Walker Buehler on during our telecast, and I asked that. I said, how do you generate the adrenaline when there's no sound there? And look, he acknowledged how bizarre it was. I mean, there are three things that we hear about with baseball in light of what's going on. One is you play because you love the game. So you can check that box because you're on the mound or you're on a field. The other is you play to win a championship, and the teams are able to do that. The third one is Buehler said last night, you play to get on the mound on a stage in which you are performing in front of thousands of people. You remove that part of the equation. And there's no question that many of these guys will try to generate that adrenaline. And initially, Buster, I think it will show up. I think when you're looking at an opponent, it will show up. I do wonder how a team that finds itself 5-15 after 20 games is going to generate adrenaline and what advantage that gives to the team they're playing that's 15-5. That's going to be very difficult. We know how hard it is in the dog days in front of crowds when your team is out of it to be motivated. Now you've removed the crowd, you're on the road and no one's there and you stink. That's going to be an awfully big challenge for some teams and perhaps give a significant advantage to the team that is on the other side and doing really well.
So in short, this has been a reminder. Yeah, fans are great. And we knew that.
and so important.
Pure baseball. Giancarlo Stanton last night was the star of the night. Mm-hmm. He looks great. He looks ready to go. He's got that streamlined body. He's lost weight. He looks more flexible. And I agree with what Alex Rodriguez said. It's nice. You know, at the outset of the year, he can get his turnaround begun and he can get back on the field without having some of the negative feedback that you might get at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, and we had Kike Hernandez go 4-for-5 with a home run. You're looking at two teams last night that were on the field, and I don't really want to exclude the Nationals, but there's a distinction between the Yankees, the Dodgers, and everyone else. And I know we haven't seen the Astros play or the A's, but when you have a lineup with Aaron Judge, who's an MVP candidate, and Gleyber Torres, who's an MVP candidate, and you introduce a guy who certainly in his heyday is an MVP candidate and looks and is currently playing as well, if not better than everyone else. And I don't mean just one game. I mean the entire spring and summer is Giancarlo Stanton. You have another MVP guy on your team. Kike Hernandez was the MVP of the game last night, but you have Seager on that team and you have Turner on that team and you have Bellinger and Betts Buehler on that team. The organizational depth of those two teams is incredible. And to see Stanton look the way he does and his work with Eric Cressy, whose name I think as the Yankees keep playing better ball over the 60 games, name we're going to get familiar with what he's done with certain players and their bodies. Absolutely. And to his credit, I love it. I love when you see players do things like Stanton has done to slim down and become more flexible. We've all seen him in that locker room, and he was a giant walking muscle. You could put him in any muscle magazine and be blown away. And now he looks a little bit more like a flexible baseball player. And for all the work he's done, gosh, more power to you. I hope he has a successful season. I really do.
And the Dodgers depth was borne out last night when we find out, you know, hours before the game that Clayton Kershaw is not going to start because he's got back stiffness from a weight room situation. And so they call on Dustin May to step into the rotation, and he's spinning sliders that are ridiculous.
Sliders that are ridiculous. Fastballs at 100, a high leg kick when he's done punching somebody out. You know, look, there's something very Dodgerish about the way Dustin May went about his business last night. Dave Roberts told us, you know, pitch count, and we saw a parade of bullpen arms come in for both the Giants and the Dodgers, but 100%. And as he said yesterday, and it'll be interesting to see if it plays out this way as you watch the Dodgers this season, against the lefty, we'll lead off Mookie. Against the righty, we'll lead off someone else, and Mookie will bat second. But we are going to ideally line up our lineup right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, and left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right on any given chance. It's just a way to neutralize any way that a bullpen can be used. And you're having to face three guys. Well, we're never going to have three left-handed hitters in a row, let alone two if we can prevent it.
Yeah. And Dale, you know, that's certainly going to mitigate the or exacerbate, I guess, the advantage you potentially get out of that three batter role that we're seeing this year. Pre-game ceremonies. Aaron Boone told us a couple hours beforehand what the Yankees were going to do. He said that in their conversations, they wanted to make sure that they did everything together so that when they were holding that 200-yard band of black fabric, they would hold it together, and then they would kneel together. And then for the national anthem, they would stand together. And that's what we saw in Washington. That's the general feeling I had from all the pregame ceremonies last night, Carl, the idea that the players are in it together in a way that they really haven't been in baseball before in terms of making, you know, making statements about social justice.
Yeah, you know, I think on social media, we've seen individuals come out, and I think they represent the opinion of many of the players, if not all of them. Jack Flaherty comes to mind. Certainly Gabe Kapler last night, along with Mike Yastrzemski, Hunter Pence, and a variety of other Giants knelt during the national anthem. Mookie Betts knelt during the national anthem while many of his teammates stood at that point that Mookie was kneeling. Cody Bellinger and Max Muncy put their hands on his shoulders. It extends from the spring into summer camp through the negotiation with Major League Baseball, in which I think that was another unifying time for the players. And this is another one. And I do think that they are as connected as I've ever seen them on causes in which you can see occasional divides and understand that you're going to look at things through different prisms and different lenses. I think they're as united as ever. And I thought last night was an example of it. To your point about the Yankees though, and Aaron Boone, does it surprise you at all that Aaron, you know, wants the team to act uniformly as a team in any action that they do, that doesn't surprise me. And I think it serves the Yankees incredibly well to have somebody who is able to build consensus in a clubhouse in which you have a variety of different personalities, cultures, backgrounds, et cetera.
Yeah, we've been talking about, you know, in a short season, some of the advantages the managers are going to have to try to find, and pulling the players together, getting them, you know, past the negativity on a day-to-day basis of things like, you know, concerns about testing, et cetera. That's something Aaron is very good at. It's something I feel like the Dodgers are very good at. I feel like Kevin Cash, Terry Francona, there's some teams that are going to have that advantage. So, yeah, you're exactly right to have Boone doing that was something I think we would have anticipated. What's your take on the new playoff format?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I like it, and I hope it continues. I think what I heard from a lot of people yesterday, I like it for a year. I like it for 1 year. I like it for as long as baseball exists. I think more teams, more fan bases, more interest, the longer you can throughout the course of the season. I understand in 162 games, there should be some reward for, or at least the concept that there should be some reward. Well, your reward is if you finish first, you get to face the eighth place team. That is your reward. You finish first. You're not facing the second place team or third place team, et cetera, et cetera. I love it. And I think if you're going to, you know, really be a World Series champion, there's nothing wrong with opening up with a three-game series. And whether you use examples of, because of how strong they are, the Yankees having to face, I don't know, the Texas Rangers and Mike Minor and Corey Kluber. Okay, if they finished eighth and you finished first, go beat them. You know, you've been better all year. Beat them. I have no problem with it. I hope it continues. I love the idea. And I'm not going to qualify it by saying just for this year. That's not the camp I live in.
Yeah, and I think as we're going to see with the runner at second base rule and extra innings, as we're seeing with the universal DH, this is this is an audition for the future to see how this goes and what you can learn from. I know during the course of yesterday, I heard one of the iterations that they were talking about was to have that selection show and, you know, to have the 1, 2, and 3 seeds potentially pick their opponents. That was not part of the agreement that was announced yesterday, Carl. But I think we all realize that they're kind of, this is like the backyard game that you and I would play as kids with our friends, the home run derby, 100%. When you say, well, if you hit it on the roof, that's it. No, you actually have to hit it to the right of your parents' window, sort of thing. And if that were to change, you know, and they were to come up with that, I think I personally like that idea. I love a selection show like that. What about you?
Well, look, they're trying to create drama. They're trying to make made-for-TV events. We're trying to make made-for-TV events. Other networks are doing those things. It's a fascinating concept. I don't have a problem with it. I will say that one of the things about the Korean baseball playoffs, which is interesting, you finish first in the regular season overall with your record. They have 10 teams. We have 30. I'm not comparing apples to apples. But what they do is, for instance, if you're going to have 16 teams and you're going to have all three games in the first round be played at one team's home park, the team with the better record, what the KBO does is that first round is a best of three. But the team that has the better record already leads the best of three, one game to none. And I heard a lot yesterday that what happens in a, let's just use the Yankees Rangers example, and the Rangers happen to win game one because Mike Minor is great. Now the Yankees have to win the next two games or whatever that team is. In the Korean baseball organization, what they do is they make it a best of three, but the team with the better record already leads it one zip. So they only need to win one game while the lesser team has to win the next two. It does give that team a huge, huge advantage. And I thought about that listening to a lot of the people say, what if they lose game one, the better team or the team with the better record? They certainly have eliminated that conversation in the KBO. And I did think, you know, that is one way if you're worried about losing the better record team, like, well, it sounds great until you know, the Yankees and the Astros and the Dodgers and the A's are eliminated in the first round. And then what are you left with? You've lost your best teams. One way to do that would be to give the team with the better record a 1-0 advantage in a best of three series.
Yep. And again, they're making these rules up as they go. So who knows? You know, who knows if that winds up coming into the conversation. And last one, I just wanted to give you some of my reporting on Dr. Anthony Fauci. I was watching him before he threw out that first pitch last night, Carl. And he was windmilling his arm. And I kind of felt bad for him because you could see that he, as we all do when you throw out a first pitch, he had some anxiety, but he wasn't able to practice. And I was thinking back to 2001 in the World Series before President George W. Bush threw out his first pitch. He was down in the Yankees batting cages throwing a complete game, getting ready for his first pitch. And Dr. Fauci went out there last night without a practice pitch with a brand new glove and a national jersey. What'd you think?
Well, I felt terrible for him because for somebody who is so fact-based and science-based, I'm sure he would look at that and say that was a disaster. That didn't go the way he thought it was going to go. But he's obviously an empathetic, personality and a guy you have sympathy with and a guy you have enormous respect for. But I just looked over to my left and saw Mark Teixeira and he was like you would expect, kind of shocked and then kind of giggling because just take it for what it was. It was a man throwing out a first pitch in a very difficult anxiety driving moment. And it didn't go well. That's all it is. There should be no judging that goes with it other than I'd like another chance at that. That would be cool if I could just have one more. I wish that who was it, Doolittle who caught it? I wish somebody said, here, do that again. Take another one.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to ask Sean Doolittle what the conversation was, but I watched him as the ball went by. He watched the ball fly by, and then he did a double take out to Fauci like, what? And then he went and he got the ball and he walked out. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that conversation here with Dr. Fauci. Said, all right, Carl, thanks for doing this.
All right, Buster, be good. Safe travels.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. And Todd, you have been an internet hero this week because you have been following the travails of the Blue Jays, the franchise that was once part of Toronto, but at the moment is sort of cut off, untethered in the baseball world, drifting, trying to land someplace, couldn't land in Pittsburgh. Apparently the players don't want to land in Buffalo, maybe to land in Baltimore. And every day it seems like I'm seeing you churning out a new logo for the new home of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, Buster, I'm reminded of coming back from Las Vegas last year and, you know, coming back into New York, supposed to come into JFK, bad weather in New York, and we are just circling central New York State, and the pilot is giving us the whole breakdown. Well, we may wind up in Montreal, which would be a problem because you probably don't have a passport. We may go to Albany, but the plane's too big, blah, blah, blah. So the Jays are circling the airport. We can only imagine where they land. I feel terrible for them. You know, the season has started. They don't have a home. Where are they going, Buster? What's the next logo? What do I do?
Well, you turned out one yesterday if they wind up in Camden Yards that incorporated a crab, which I thought was really good on short notice.
Hey, you know, it's a small space you've got to fill with something that has immediate impact. So I close my eyes. I think of Baltimore and, you know, the Maryland flag was a little too involved to put in that small space. So we get to a crab.
And it, in a weird sort of way, leads perfectly into our conversation this week because we were scheduled to talk about Camden Yards.
I threw you a flat fastball right up the middle, Buster.
Well, I appreciate that. What do you got on my favorite ballpark?
Well, you know, listen, Camden Yards, we talked about Jean-Marie Smith, and you spoke with her several months ago at this point. I don't even know what day it is. But at any rate, Camden Yards, of course, is the ballpark that changed the face of baseball. It changed the way we see a game in the modern experience for a lot of reasons, but incorporating the warehouse out in right field, that huge structure into the park itself, some retro flourishes and touches, the fact that it is so firmly integrated into downtown, the all-important sense of place. Here it is. I got a couple of things about Camden Yards, and then I want to drill you guys because this is a ballpark with great meaning for the both of you. You know, I think one of the unique things about Camden Yards is the fact that most people enter from center field, right? I mean, that's or left field. Yeah. That's a really unusual thing. The home plate entrance, which is traditionally the front door, you know, you're entering through a totally different place. And just I will say that as the, you know, it's been around for 30 years now. It's unbelievable. But that Hilton Hotel out in left field, it's blocked the beautiful old building that you used to see. I think it was a Bramo Seltzer building, right? The tower. Yeah. And while it's a very nice place to stay out there, you know, it's made things a little bit different. But what a gem of a ballpark, a great city. You wish the franchise was better, a powerhouse at one time. So now I'm going to bring it back to you and to Taylor. Start with you, Buster. What are your thoughts on Camden Yards?
Well, I remember the first time I went in there, it was in the April of the year that it opened. And I was just blown away as a baseball fan, how unique it was. And then so, you know, fast forward a couple of years, I get an opportunity to work at the Baltimore Sun. You know, I've always said that it's my favorite park because I felt such a gift that I got to go to that place every day to work. It was just amazing that the smells, the sights, you know, all the different things you'd see. And you mentioned the Hilton, which is I think my least favorite building in the world, because that, Todd, that, you know, the view of the skyline, the Bromo Seltzer Tower, I love that. And so when I go there now, I look at that Hilton and it just makes me just wince. The only thing I would say about that is that there is a gym very high in that building. And I always, when I go to Camden Yards now, I think of the people who are up there running on treadmills. I think it's like on the 10th or the 12th floor. And I'm like, that would be a pretty cool view to be able to go for a run.
Yeah.
You know, to go for a run and to be able to see that. But that, it's my favorite park. I'm biased. And I hope that this is going to be one of those ballparks like Fenway, like Wrigley Field, that they do everything they can to keep it going, you know, as far as the eye can see.
I agree. And before I go to Taylor on it, I would say that, Buster, you hit on something that made me think about this. The beauty of Camden Yards that probably people who are a little bit younger can't appreciate We've talked about the fact that we had all these concrete donuts that looked the same back in the day. But Camden Yards, for those of us who love baseball, it is a visual and, you know, just wonderful celebration of the sport. It embraces the sport in a way that few places do. So having said all that, Taylor, what about you?
All right there, Todd. Buster, let's go down to the yard, get some Natty Bows, maybe an Orange Crush. Yeah, love Camden Yards. Obviously, it's my finest Baltimore accent there. Just a lot of memories there growing up. Not a bad seat in the house. I'm not super crazy about the center field seats, but literally everywhere else, you got a great view. Utah Street, you know, we always talk sense of place. I mean, when you walk in there and that place is buzzing, it is like a festival of baseball. Like, it is just, it's coming at you from all sides. You got, your senses are tingling all over. I love it. The center field bar that they added a couple years ago, I think that's a great addition, you know, modernizing the place a little bit. I like that a lot. The policy they have to bring in your own food is phenomenal. You got to grab a hot dog, grab your peanuts, your pistachios outside, bring those in, save you a couple dollars, there, hon. and then if you're doing a little pregame action, pickles, sliders, bullpen, unbeatable. Personal favorite spot, Pratt Street Ale House, a little bit further down the street, but they make their own brews and have a mean crab pretzel. So I love Oriole Park. It's just amazing. So many memories there. And it's cool to be working on the pod and knowing that it's Buster's favorite as well, although not super surprising.
You mentioned a couple of places, and yes, that pregaming experience at each of the places you've mentioned is central to the experience. We always wrap up this part of the discussion, and since I'm flinging it back at you guys, I'll take it to Buster. How about Memorial Stadium? What are your memories of there?
I actually never went there. you know, I didn't cover the American League until 1995, so I never went there. But the thing that I'll always remember, because you always hear those great stories from those teams, and you know, the Orioles' history is unique among the teams that, you know, and players that you speak with who play on those teams, in that so many of the players who played for the Orioles stayed in Baltimore. They lived in Baltimore. They lived in Baltimore into retirement. And so Memorial Stadium was really a part of that. The Dodgers in Brooklyn was another example of that, where you hear stories about, you know, players staying there. And so when they closed Memorial Stadium, they had this incredible ceremony. And Todd, I know you've seen videotape of it. When I watch it, it makes me cry.
Yeah, it was
amazing. They did an incredible job where it's the last day of the season and nobody knows what's going to happen. And then I think it was the Field of Dreams music that they played. And then all of a sudden, Brooks Robinson in full uniform jogs out to third base. And then following him, Frank Robinson jogs out to right field. And then player after player who was on those teams, from superstars like Jim Palmer, you know, Hall of Famers like Jim Palmer's, to, you know, they had this great platoon, John Lowenstein and Gary Renicky. Those guys ran out together. They had, you know, part-time players, full-time players filling the field, and there wasn't a sound, and there wasn't a PA, someone on the PA announcing that it was Brooks Robinson, because of course everyone knew, and the last player who ran out onto the field for that ceremony was appropriately Cal Ripken, Jr., who carried the franchise into their next home. I'm sure you've seen that videotape, Todd.
I have, and I remember when it happened. I went to a couple of games at just a handful at Memorial Stadium. I remember being struck by the fact that it was in this neighborhood, just the strangest thing in the world. And Buster, to your point, very Ebbets Field-like in a certain sense, and a place that was just so tightly integrated that the players were such a part of the area. It was pretty clear. And all those great Oriole teams elevate, you know, we talk about this all the time too, elevated the place to, you know, Valhalla status in a certain sense too. But one last thing for me, when you talk about you didn't cover the American League, there was a time before interleague play. That's all we're going to leave with.
Yeah, exactly. Golly, that's gone on for a long time now. What, 24 years? Good Lord.
Yeah, we're getting old.
All right. What you got for this week's quiz?
All right, Buster. The Washington Nationals are wearing a sleeve patch to commemorate their World Series championship. Here's this week's question. What team was the first to do likewise, a sleeve patch in commemoration of their title? Was it A, the 1981 Kansas City Royals? Was it B, the 1911 Athletics? Was it C, the 1956 Brooklyn Dodgers? Or was it D, the 1907 White Sox? First club to wear a sleeve patch commemorating their World Series title. 81 Royals, 11 Athletics, 56 Brooklyn Dodgers, or the 07 White Sox?
I tell you what, I'm a little bit nervous about this one because I had a team in mind and that didn't show up on the board. But go ahead, Taylor.
All right. I am going to – this seems like a modern thing, so I'm going to stick to my modern sensibilities. I'm going to go A, Royals.
I'm going to go the 07 White Sox.
Buster is correct.
Oh,
Buster yes. is correct. And woohoo, you know, quite often I'll throw out a question and I'll say, you got a 25% chance, and Taylor, you took the bait on that. It seems like a modern construct, but the 07 White Sox, wow, first to do it.
There you go. And Taylor, I don't know if you listened to last Friday. I gained even more ground.
No.
The Empire is striking back.
No wonder you like Travis so much. You're like, oh, great replacement. Have him on anytime. That's exactly why.
Oh, that's right. Where are the standings now, Todd?
Well, I'd have to add things up. We have just completed week 20. I have an Excel spreadsheet sitting in front of me. So I will do that and I'll tweet it out later.
Okay, that sounds good. But the fact of the matter is I am gaining ground, Taylor. So watch out. Todd, thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Happy opening day.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Friday. A loaded set of Bleacher Tweets. And I actually want to lead off with my own question here. While the rain delay was going on, I was watching the broadcast. Matty V and A-Rod, they're like, we're going to track down Buster here any minute now. What? Where did you go? What were you doing during the rain delay? Like, you were, I'm sure you just skittered off and trying to find some cover there.
No, I actually never moved. I mean, I moved underneath the ledge, so I wasn't getting rain down. But besides that, I was sitting in the same place. We had some technical issues last night where there were times when, you know, you wanted to add into the broadcast and you go, I've got something on this and you want to let people know, and they couldn't hear us for periods of time from the ballpark in Washington. But it was, you know, I was glad I was here, but to echo Joe Panic, it was weird. There's no doubt.
Got it. You mentioned that Joe Panic interview on the broadcast. Very cool. Let's get to the tweets. Francisco Morales at Frankie M316 writes in, if a team that shouldn't have made the playoffs does win the World Series in this new playoff format, does this make this year's champions even more questionable, or would that make them more deserving as they had a rougher time getting there?
Yeah, Francisco, it feels like a lot of folks are trying to find equivalency between this year and what happens in other years. There is none, in my opinion. I just look at it as an outlier. I don't know about you, Taylor. It's not that hard for me to separate, you know, whatever happens this year, whether a team wins a championship or, you know, loses in the postseason. It's just a different year. And it's a different context. Like if the Washington Nationals win the World Series, then we will say, yeah, they won back-to-back World Series. But one of the two wouldn't have the equivalency of other championships. There'd be no question about that for me.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I hear people all the time with all the sports that are restarting. It's like, who cares of who wins? It's going to be illegitimate. Like we're all living this. Like we're not forgetting what's going on in the world. So I don't think it's that big a deal. It'll certainly, you know, have its place in history, and that'll be that. So just enjoy the baseball, everyone. Corey Rueckert at Corey R_12 writes in, does the price for players and trades increase if the expanded playoffs stick? More teams looking to make moves with less teams willing to trade.
Corey, you're exactly right. Supply and demand, and there's going to be less supply and there's going to be more demand.
PK Steinberg, a much liked tweet on Twitter. I think I know the answer to this, but he writes in, are Max Scherzer's 3 Cy Youngs, World Series win, and stats standard and advanced to date enough to get him elected into the Hall of Fame?
PK, 100%. If his career ended today, Max Scherzer would be making a speech in Cooperstown.
And we got another addition to the Cleveland naming hunt. Christopher Savage at Savage and Beast writes in, any chance Cleveland becomes the Blue Sox, it would finish out the American flag for the Sox teams. They do wear blue socks as a part of their uniform.
Yeah, and their history includes, at one point, their team was called the Blues. We talked about that. That's an interesting idea. But I don't think the Cleveland baseball franchise would feel like they would need to fill out that for the American League. I think their focus would be on what their fans want. And my sense is that there's a lot of momentum trending towards Spiders.
Last one for today, our pal Jason Amico. He wants to know, could lovely Hartford, Connecticut, Dunkin' Donut Park, be considered as a potential home for the Blue Jays? You mentioned it a little bit earlier. Do you think it could happen?
That'd be fun. And I saw, what was it, the governor of Connecticut or the mayor of Hartford was lobbying hard to invite the Blue Jays to come and play. Look, the issue is the Blue Jays players are telling the team they want to play in a major league facility. They have access to a minor league facility in Buffalo. And I think if they play minor league games, that's where they would wind up. But for now, their focus seems to be on playing as many games in major league parks as possible.
It is the governor lobbying hard for that. So
yep.
That's Bleacher Tweets for today. Subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Baseball's back. We'll be back on Monday. Thanks, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Ravi, to Todd, and Taylor. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we have to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.